Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 59, and the Steelers are officially going to take part in the 2016 NFL playoffs. They get their 600th regular season franchise win in, Dave, what I think was the biggest, most exciting regular season game in the history of Heinz Field.
Boy, we'll be talking about the end of that game, I think, for several more years. There's been a lot of very dramatic, exhilarating Steelers-Ravens games. Of course, a few of those taking place in the playoffs. But, man, the last, 7 minutes of that game really had you on pins and needles, regardless of which fan base you were in. I can't wait to see being as how that game was only broadcast locally in Pittsburgh, and of course nationally only on the NFL Network. I can't wait to see the ratings on that, because if you're a football fan, how can you not love that game?
Yeah, it was. It was a great game. There's a lot to get to. I mean, it wasn't perfect. We talked, over the course of the week. You asked me Friday as we were closing up, what's the narrative going to be if the Steelers lose? I said, very simply, if they lose the turnover differential badly, that's going to be the reason. Of course, they were down to, basically lost the turnover battle 2-0. But they didn't really get started offensively till late in this game. They didn't tackle all that well. They made the defensive line probably wore down a bit. But at the end of the day, Dave, it just comes down to the stars were stars. And Ben Roethlisberger, who didn't play particularly well, couldn't have played better than he did in the fourth quarter. Le'Veon Bell was dynamite basically throughout the game, but an unbelievable touchdown run. And then Antonio Brown, a very quiet first half, a huge fourth quarter, and again, a touchdown run that will go down, in for the ages in terms of people remembering plays in Steeler history. Antonio Brown bullying through three Ravens and extending the ball over the goal line will be right up there with just about any of them.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, what comes to your what's the first few that come to your mind when you talk about Steelers' dramatic touchdowns and all? Obviously, the immaculate reception is one of those. The Santonio Holmes toe tap in the end zone in the Super Bowl. The James Harrison touchdown return at halftime against the Cardinals. I can't get that Mike Wallace touchdown out of my head in the game against the Green Bay Packers several years ago. Help me out.
Isaac Redman in Baltimore scoring a touchdown, but I don't know that I'll remember one like that, because we could talk about what the Steelers did there. Ben threw the ball to the goal line with a bunch of Ravens right there. Obviously the Steelers didn't have any timeouts because how they manage things. If the refs don't give him that call, now look, I think at the end of the day, the play would have been reviewed regardless. I don't think there's, I don't think there was any chance that in reality that the clock runs out. But if AB doesn't get across there, and it's not a question of did he get across, I'm not sure the Steelers get another playoff. It's going to be tough to get up there, have the ball spotted, and have everybody down and get the spike in to try and kick a field goal to tie or to try and do something to win if that's what you choose to do. But that was drama at its finest.
I tweeted at about 2 or 3 in the morning. I don't even want to think about what the reaction would have been had Brown not gotten in on that play. I mean, you, you, I mean, how flipped is the narrative then, you know? We're talking about how bad Roethlisberger was in that game, how, geez, I mean, go on and on. Clock management, play calling, blah, blah, blah. You know, if he doesn't stretch that football across, fire Tomlin, fire everybody, move the team to Las Vegas, you know, those kind of things. Because
I saw you tweeted about, I laughed at the tweet you sent out, you know, probably at 2 or 3 also this morning about, you know, Ian's got to stop tweeting me, you know, during the game and firing everybody. You know, wait till last week with the Steelers down 14 and then ended up winning, I decided that before the postgame show, I'd just tweet 50 of these tweets that I got in the second half. And I almost did it again yesterday. I mean, I've got a string, as I'm sure you do, of 100 tweets of, you know, Tomlin's Harbaugh's bitch, you know, those are the kind ones, you know, going on through the list of how bad, you know, everything is with the Steelers. Now, look, I'm not going to say that they were playing well or that things were good, but it's a 60-minute game. Let's see what happens. Let's see how things go. And you know, that makes for dramatic comebacks. And that was as dramatic and as entertaining as really any game I could think of, because credit to the Ravens, too, to have games like that. The other team's got to do things. And the Ravens put on a drive that the Steelers had put on the week before against the Bengals. They had 6 minutes left, and they went down the field. And I'm sure they're thinking about whether they scored too fast, as we said when the Steelers played the Cowboys. You know, they needed a touchdown to win that game. They couldn't just kick a field goal. But, you know, that was a great drive by the Ravens. Credit to them. And then, obviously, the Steelers answered with one of the great drives in their history.
Yeah, to sit there on Twitter during a game and see a steady stream of that, and then you go back to try to find a lot of those tweets that have been deleted, you know. I would be in Twitter jail if I probably went through and tried to retweet all the ones that all the negative tweets in there. Look, here's the thing. Whenever you have a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, are you really out of the game? You know, at that point, and look, I mean, it was you're talking about fourth quarter, early fourth quarter when this, you know, when they started mounting that comeback. Now, obviously, and watching that drive by the Ravens late, boy, it was like being paper cut to death, and then having some vinegar poured on you or some rubbing alcohol poured on you. It just seemed like, you know, and you know, when you look at the entire game as a whole, the Steelers defense held the Ravens to what, 6 points in the first half. Man, the needless yards in there. You know, I know it's all about, you know, protecting the final few blades of grass there and preventing the opponent from scoring. But, man, the time and time again, we've seen the poor tackling and the yards after contact and this, you know, at points looking like this defensive line and the linebackers are just war slap out and all. But, look, they rebounded from that. And, yeah, the Ravens are probably talking about, boy, we wish we could have taken a little bit more time off that clock, at least, what, nine more seconds or so in that game. But, you know, credit to Roethlisberger and the rest of the offense, because he was not sharp at all for a lot of that game. Those two interceptions were just brutal. Even though he had a nice completion percentage during the first half of that game, a lot of those throws he had to be bailed out on by his wide receivers, I thought, as well. So credit for him, to him, for being able to put all that behind him, go out there and just do what he does in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, and so many guys came up big in this one, and you know, we'll get through the kind of the stats and how things went. But you know, Dave, again, a little bit odd to see the Steelers, as we talked about on Friday, see them come out and have that opening drive where, you know, that's as good a drive as they've had all season. A heavy dose of Le'Veon Bell, I think 6 run, 3 passes. They get the penalty when Mosley, I think, or one of the linebackers hits Eli Rogers, and they call helmet-to-helmet defenseless receiver. They go right down the field. And then between their own penalties and just, you know, some questionable play calling, they don't score again in the half. And the thing is, I think we both thought they would come out and throw the ball a fair bit to set up the run, and they didn't. And again, you just wondered, like, were they you know, looking back to the previous game, where they are they trying to play games against the Ravens? Now, Mike denied this before the game. He was asked the question, but are you just trying to be conservative against the Ravens and be in a position to win the game late? It just, I don't get it. People are going to look at these two games and say, my goodness, they scored 14 points in the first game in the fourth quarter. They scored 21 points in the second game in the fourth quarter. And that's, you know, out of the 35 points they scored, well, you could, you know, or whatever they have. They had 14 in the first game and they had 31 in this one. So 45 out of 45, they scored 35 of them in the fourth quarter. You know, what's going on?
Well, I think when you see those two safeties back like that, you know, you start counting the numbers in the box, you know, logic kind of tells you sometimes to.
Yeah, and that is what it is. I mean, that's the right answer.
You know, to run against it and try to do what you can to get them to draw those safeties up. And the thing is, you know, tip your hat to the Ravens. I've said this all year, David. That Ravens defense is good. And if that had the Ravens gotten into the playoffs, I think they could have made a little bit of run just because of the play of their defense. I really do. Now, do I think they were a Super Bowl caliber team? I don't know. We've seen teams with lesser of offenses, you know, win it before as well too. But this is a good defense that's very, very familiar with what the Steelers like to do offensively and that kind of thing. And I think the Steelers just went in with the mindset, look, we're going to strap it up and try to, you know, exert our will on them and keep trying to run the football, and hopefully at some point it'll open up for us down the field where maybe we can run some no huddle and all like that. So, I think that's why too. You see them use that heavier personnel on top of it with the extra tackle and Hubbard. And make no mistake, the Steelers ran the football, right, David? I mean, even in the first half, I mean, how many times did this offense cross midfield with these possessions? The thing is they just couldn't finish those drives outside of that very first one. I mean, Le'Veon Bell and the rest of them, I thought they were moving the football well. They just weren't cashing in when they needed to. And, of course, you know, a few penalties mixed in here and there to kill some drives obviously doesn't help.
Yeah, and I think all four penalties they had were in the first half and maybe even in the first quarter. You know, penalties early in the game. Maybe there were a couple of those rolled over in the early second quarter, but none in the second half. Dave, just you talked about the Browns drive, the Ravens drive, you know, getting killed by 1,000 paper cuts. What's really interesting is in that Ravens drive where they scored. Now, they didn't have to convert a fourth down, and you have to assume that they were in four down territory there when they crossed midfield, being down 4 points. They converted four third downs. The Steelers, in their three touchdown drives in the fourth quarter, only faced one third down, and that was the pass to Jesse James from the 14-yard line down to the four, or the, you know, wherever the exact yardage were. And so it just shows they were getting the big plays. And the reason they had that one is I think they had spiked the ball once there. So it was, you know, the Steelers didn't face those, you know, high drama plays, which we've seen in the past in games where they're either trying to put it away or trying to come back and score, and it's a do or die play. They didn't face them. Credit to the Browns. They made their plays. And, you know, at the same time, the Steeler defense, you asked them to make a stand there, and they didn't do it. As good as they've been during this win streak, not giving up more than 20 points, they couldn't come up with the big play at the end. And Flacco and the Ravens did. They kept, you know, checking down to Pitta, making a couple other plays when they needed to. And I'll give the Browns running backs a ton of credit, man. You want to talk about yards after contact, Dave? I know you guys chart that stuff a lot for the Steeler backs. West, Dixon, whoever it was. I mean, there was one play in particular where I felt like they got hit 1 yard, you know, right at the line of scrimmage, basically, and went for seven more. The pile just kept moving around midfield. And then, you know, got to give Juszczyk credit for his touchdown run. Just ran over guys for you know, in the hole and went 10 yards for a touchdown. So it was a physical game. It was an entertaining game. I think, you know, both teams are going to find fault with what they did, and there are faults to find, but both teams also did some great things, particularly offensively, and the Steelers stars getting it done at the end. That was a fun, fun game to watch. You know, if your heart wasn't in your throat.
17 third down opportunities for the Ravens. And when you look at the turnovers, and, you know, it makes you – I wonder if Harbaugh's still kind of scratching his head, wondering how he wound up losing that one. Yeah, you're right. You know, you look at the Steelers, you're saying, man, only seven third down opportunities. What the heck happened in there for the Steelers to score the points that they did? They had to have a pick six or something in there, only facing seven third down opportunities and converting three of them. It's a nice percentage, 43%. Don't get me wrong, but you know, as you, there were some chunk plays in there when it really, really, really mattered, and it ended up average game per offensive play in this game, 5.1 for the Ravens and 7.4 for the Steelers against, you know, what I continue to say, a more than better than average Ravens defense there as well. And man, just the if I would have told you at the start of the season, David, that DeMarcus Ayers would have had a very meaningful catch during a late drive in a game to clinch the AFC North title against the Baltimore Ravens, what would you have told me?
Well, I mean, I'll just take that and say, you know, if you had told me that DeMarcus Ayers, Kobe Hamilton, if you had told me in week four that DeMarcus Ayers, Kobe Hamilton, LT Walton, Johnny Maxey are playing meaningful snaps and you won't see Tua Hayward or Jarvis Jones on the field, and, you know, we can go through the list of everybody else, I'd say, man, things got off the rails. Something fierce somewhere along the way.
Yeah, Houston, you have a problem.
Yeah, right.
Bad as well. So, man, those young wide receivers, you know, not flashy. They're not really, really.
Oh, Eli Rogers is pretty flashy.
Well, you know, like I said, like we had talked about prior to the game. You know, Eli, the biggest thing with Eli Rogers up until that game yesterday is like to see him put together two halves, right? You know, I mean,
again, I think it's targets. But yes, I mean, look, Eli Rogers' ball in his hands is like Antonio Brown. I mean, he is dynamite.
And you know, we saw a more complete game. That was, I mean, all the way around, not only the most complete game Eli Rogers, I think, has had this season, that catch that he had late in the ball game.
That's the definition of a circus catch, huh?
Well, I not so much circus as it is just clutch. I mean, just very, very clutch. Full extension on that one. You know, one of those. I mean, it was a second down play, if memory serves me. So you would live to fight again if he doesn't make that catch. But boy, I mean, when he does make it, you know, it's a huge, huge game. He also had a while that drive didn't end, culminate in a touchdown. You know, early in the game, the 39 catch and run that he had in the first half ended with a or what was that? Was that the third? I think it was the third quarter when he had that one. That one culminated in a field goal drive as well, too, to draw. I think at the time it drew the Steelers back within something like 4 points at that time there, too. And, boy, I mean, he was wide open coming across the middle of the field, and Ben threw him even more wide open on the play. And you go back to talking about one of his early catches in the game, a ball that was a little bit behind him. Ben also tried to get him killed on one play early in the game. I think it was, on the opening drive? Oh. On the opening drive there, and he got clocked. Who was it, by Mosley? Drew the penalty on that one as well too, and didn't Ben went right back to him the very next play, didn't he? Or am I thinking of something else on that one?
I don't think he went right back to him, but I mean that's a couple games in a row. You remember against the Bengals last week, he teed him up into Vontaze Burfict. I mean,
that one happened second and three, 9:24 left in the first quarter. is when he took that shot, that unnecessary roughness call from Mosley in the very, very next. The very, very next play was the left tackle play. The end around where he gained.
Six yards.
Yeah, the jet sweep, 6 yards. My bad. I thought they went to him again, but it wasn't a pass. It was a jet sweep there.
Yeah, so Ben's thrown high to him over the middle a couple times here, weeks in a row, and you don't exactly want to be staring at Vontaze Burfict and C.J. Mosley back to back while you're spread out and your ribs are exposed. You know, you'd like to see Ben get those a little lower, and you know, that's, we've seen that with some of Ben's throws here the past couple of weeks. He's high, and that's been an issue. He's not, you know, we haven't seen Ben kind of, you know, guys sliding into catches like we've often seen in the past. If he's missing, he's missing high. And, you know, same type of thing on the interceptions. We've talked about exactly the type of coverages that we've seen him throw into to have those types of things happen. It wasn't a, you know, his only 6 of 9 for 60 yards in the first half, and then comes out and, you know, the first play of the second half, and then the interception of Mosley, which it was, he threw it into coverage. The Browns sniffed that one out. It was rough, and then it was great. And I don't know, again, why he was able to find – more of the middle of the field late and the deep middle of the field. But he was. It was very funny that, you know, there's so many things to talk about on those last couple drives, but I had said that Adam Crowley was sitting next to me when on the play before the pass interference call to Ayers. I said, DeMarcus Ayers is going back to the huddle saying right now, like, they aren't covering me. Now, I don't have any idea if DeMarcus Ayers said anything to Ben, which I'm guessing he didn't, but he was having single man out there. And he got the opportunity, and just, you know, Ben was able to find guys. The play that Dave, one of the biggest plays that, you know, we'll talk about, but I'm sure won't be mentioned very often, was to start that very last drive. The first pass was a 3 yard pass, and you know, they're in the shadow of their own goalposts there. So you get the 3 yard pass to Jesse James, but the next play might be Antonio. It might be, you know, it's obviously it's not as significant as the touchdown, but he throws to Antonio Brown on that left sideline. Antonio Brown jukes inside with two defenders there, and then spins outside, gets the first down, and gets out of bounds. And those two plays, I think, took a total of 9 seconds. That was a great play by Antonio Brown to get out of bounds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not a lot. You know, I know some people get upset at some of those spikes and when some of those happen. But, I mean, just –
Well, like, I did. Yeah, the spike I did.
You know, but I mean, just all the way around the last drive, not a lot not to like about that. I mean, boy, Jesse James, a few key catches in this game as well too, and you know, that it's good to see him get, you know, 4 for 49 in a game. What about the handoff to Le'Veon Bell where. A little bit of confusion.
It almost falls down.
Yeah, I mean, the confusion in the backfield there, that's probably the best thing that could probably happen on that play. When you kind of go back and look at it, he manages to find the end zone on that one. Le'Veon Bell, the pass from Ben, with the other touchdown in there as well, too. Xavier Grimble, I thought Grimble was going to have a bigger game than what he did, but boy, that catch. I mean, you talk about why Ben not finding the middle of the field. Eric Weddle's a heck of a safety, a heck of a center fielder. And I just don't think Ben wanted to test deep down the middle of the field against a guy like Weddle. And if you go back, it's a wonder Ben tested him on that touchdown. You know, to Grimble down the seam there, because even though Ben looks to his right first, I didn't think he did enough to. Even though you look at Weddle, he was kind of frozen in that situation, but you know, he still made a. Weddle still got there almost at the same time as the football did, and you know, I thought there was a good chance, and said it on the podcast on Friday, that I thought Grimble could step up and make some plays. I obviously thought there'd be more than what he did, but I mean, that was a huge touchdown catch for him, and really got the Steelers off to the right start there.
That was a really good throw. I mean, he threw it over the linebacker in front of the safety. He had room to get it in there, but you know, that was the throw of the half for sure. And Grimble, you know, he's shown many times, even though he's had some drops, the drops have been kind of passes in his breadbasket, kind of around his chest, his stomach area. whereas going up and catching the football, he has shown that he's pretty good at that.
And, you know, I keep kind of referring to him as a very, very, you know, like a Ladarius Green light, you know. That's kind of way I view him. And as long as he's been around now, you know, there's no reason to think that he doesn't know what's going on, right? I mean,
You know, that was his first catch, I think, in six games, right? I mean, he hadn't had a catch in a while.
Well, he's been down a couple of games, right? You know, when Ladarius came back, so he's obviously not going to see the field a lot when Ladarius Green is out there, because those two are very similar type players. You're gonna try to stay away as much as possible from having Xavier Grimble on the field doing much blocking. At the same time, you can't put the red light on his head too, and only send him in the game, you know, when you're gonna throw the football, and he's not much of an asset to you on special teams. So, you know, he better make plays in those situations because he's not gonna get many opportunities, to do so. So, you know, good to see Ben be able to spread that football around, as you said at the top of the show. Antonio Brown, one catch for a handful of seven yards or something like that, and that came very, very early in the game in the first half. But boy, did he
second play.
Boy, did he turn it on in the second half. You know, defensively, Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, the Steelers offense did give the. Ravens the ball inside the red zone twice that led to 10 points, but this wasn't their best defensive effort.
No. And that's kind of where I was going next there. You hate that Roethlisberger gives you 10 easy points, but kind of, as I said at the top of the show there, it just, even in the first half, it felt like, man, just, you know, too much unnecessary yardage. And then you get into that third quarter there, and it's, you know, can somebody make a tackle here? I mean, you miss a couple of plays in the backfield that turn out to be what I like to call, you know, successful plays, where a running back gets, let's say, 4.5 yards on a carry there. The tackling's got to be better. Yeah, I can't wait to see our missed tackle report this week to see what that is. All that aside, I thought Javon Hargrave played a spectacular game up front, and it just goes to show you. Look, you know, we'll look real close at the All 22 film to see Johnny Maxey. I thought there was at least two times I thought where Johnny Maxey might have been lined up in the wrong spot there. Ricardo Matthews, he seemed to be struggling a little bit with that ankle. It'd be good to give him a little bit time off here. We'll have to look and see how Daniel McCullers played as well too, along with LT Walton. But maybe some missed fills in there by the inside linebackers. I know in one of those early runs, the Michael Campanera explosive in around James Harrison just got sucked way inside there and was immediately a non-factor in that one as well. So, yeah, you'd like to see the tackling. I mean, how many times have we talked about that this year? You know, see the tackling.
Do you think you're going to get 15 missed tackles in this one? 15 to 20?
Oh, yeah. They had like three or four on one play, right?
Yeah. And if you talk about if you were counting moving the pile, it'd be more than that. I mean, I think they wore down a bit.
And William Gay, very uncharacteristic. He doesn't, you know, William Gay, especially out on the edge. Now, a few of his missed tackles came inside the box there, so to speak, I think. It's not common for William Gay to not be able to wrap up, and I think he had a couple there, maybe a couple on a consecutive plays there as well too. I mean, that's uncommon. The Steve Smith catch and run early in the game there. Artie Burns misses a tackle and poor angle by Mike Mitchell, and then boom, Mike Mitchell also should get credit for a missed tackle on that play as well too. And you know, you turn around and he's down the field. You add in the push out of bounds on top of it. You're talking about 3 yards galore there.
I'll agree with all of that. And, you know, there are a variety of plays. I mean, how about Sean Davis coming on the blitz where he's got Flacco dead to rights?
How many times have we talked about that this year, unfortunately? Look, I'm not blasting the kid here. I mean, the kid, he's seemingly gotten better almost every week since he's started as a safety, talking about Sean Davis. But, yeah, you would like to see him credit to Flacco. He did a good job of stepping up and avoiding that and then leaking out to his right side there. But
Flacco had a good game. Flacco had a pretty good game. He's going to go down. You're going to have an interception on the stat sheet in the last play, so who cares? But I thought Flacco did a good job. I mean, he wasn't throwing deep very much, but I thought he did what he needed to do. He didn't turn it over.
Yeah, and I wrote about Pitta before the game as well, too. That's his third down guy. And you have to know he's going to go to him in a situation. There were how many times did we see the Steelers rush three on second or third and long, and Flacco still finds Pitta and gets a first.
Annoyingly. I mean, it's like they're going to throw to Pitta.
Yeah.
And he didn't complete it.
The only thing I will say about all that and all those catches to Pitta, and I don't have the stats for that. I'll have it by the time we talk again on Wednesday, is they seemingly did a good job of not letting him have yards after the catch. In other words, they were tackling the catch in those situations, but at the same time, he's moving the chain. So, he's not a guy that scares you after the catch. You talk about Flacco having a decent game, and I did think that. But how many throws did Flacco miss? What about the one down the seam to Pitta?
That was a tough catch, they could have made that play, and that's the play that Ben and Grimble made. I mean, they were very similar type plays. So, he wasn't perfect.
That ball whizzed right by Ryan Shazier's head. Ryan Shazier's head before he could turn around there. So, we talk about all the time, Lawrence Timmons can't allow Lawrence Timmons to run with these run with these players down the field there. What's the narrative if Ryan Shazier gets beat in that situation there? Lawrence Timmons, by the way, that guy's playing some really good football right now on that X. Boy, we could make this a
Fire X, yeah.
Yeah, we could make this a 5-hour podcast today very easily with the way I like to ramble. But Timmons, he looked like he's fired out of a cannon on that cross blitz where he got Flacco there. But really, really, really solid game for Timmons, and this is like three or four of those in a row for him.
No question what the Steelers have been doing in terms of what those inside guys have been doing. They've been dominating play. You look at the stat sheet and you see what Harrison, Timmons, Shazier, again, Shazier's, I don't think he's been as dominant in the last couple of games as he has been in some others this year, but he's made some big plays when he's had to. Hey, Steeler Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows, and if you're looking to buy your first home for Christmas, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out our podcast listeners. You can call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Dave, there are a lot of things that we haven't really gotten to. Let's talk about the injuries going into the game, the inactive list, kind of the playoff structure, where the Steelers go from here in terms of how they approach this game on Sunday. So let's start with the inactive list. And
hey, before I forget, I doubt Ramon Foster listens to the podcast, but I need to apologize to him talking about how not really a guy that you want pulling. from left to right. Did you see? He had a couple of nice pulls in that game. What about the one early where he just, he just pancaked pulling to that side. It ended up being a very, very nice run for Le'Veon Bell early in that game.
Didn't they pull Alley as well a couple times?
Yeah, early, a very kind of a dart concept in that first drive as well, too. Pulled him all the way across the formation. Roosevelt Nix was Roosevelt Nix. Some nice key blocks, lead blocks in that game once again. They were able to run the football both right and left side and run the power to the right as well, too. And nothing gets me more excited than to see guards pull and tackles pull and fullbacks lead. And we saw that. So, you know, I wanted to make sure that I take my hat off and hand it to Ramon Foster this morning.
Yeah, and how about also, I think that's now three sacks in the last six games total. Another clean sheet for the offensive line in terms of sacks. That's how you win football games.
He was under some pressure in that game, but I mean,
he was.
But you know, that comes with. That's why, you know, Ben has been sometimes too, because he's able to avoid some of that. But they really have protected him well this year.
Okay, so inactives. You know, some of this not surprising in the sense of, you know, we've known the injuries. So no Stephon Tuitt. No Ladarius Green in terms of the injuries. Now, the two guys that have been the longest inactive were active for this game in D'Angelo Williams and Darius Heyward-Bey. And Heyward-Bey was active on special teams, but surprisingly, he could play special teams but didn't take any offensive snaps. You thought maybe, I would have thought, you know, if you can run down there as a gunner, you can certainly run the nine route. So I'm a little surprised we didn't see him at all, and you saw errors instead. So you had that. So we know the two moves they made that we've kind of discussed during the week or on Saturday. Johnny Maxey up and Al Shabazz up. What a route he's had over the last month or so, playing with the Texans and with the Steelers again. And Shamarco goes to the IR. He's probably played his last snap as a Steeler. And Darrell Richardson gets cut. No surprise there. But D'Angelo Williams, who was active, did not play a snap. And in fact, I didn't see D'Angelo Williams. So I'm assuming he had a jacket on the whole time, because I never saw him standing next to the offensive group with a jacket off. He could have been standing there, but it was never as if he was going to go into the game. And I thought, you know, we discussed with Le'Veon Bell and the lack of receivers, maybe we'd see Bell split out and see Williams in the backfield. We didn't see that. So that was the basics. Then it was on the defensive line. What's going to happen there? Stephon Tuitt did not dress for this game. And I think, you know, maybe not surprisingly to us if you think about it, but it was certainly jarring to see a former first-round pick a healthy scratch. And that's what Jarvis Jones was for the first time, a guy who didn't play a snap at all last week. He's a healthy scratch. Justin Gilbert, who was ill for a couple days but not injured, was a – we'll call him a healthy scratch. Again, surprised because Sammy Coates wasn't active, and I thought Gilbert might get the opportunity to return kicks. That job went to Kobe Hamilton, and again, Fitz Toussaint. So Coates was the other guy inactive, and then Mihalik and Mettenberger. Did I forget anybody, Dave, or leave any? Oh, Ladarius Green, obviously.
Yeah, and even though I predicted that Justin Gilbert wouldn't be one of the inactives, I wrote in my Saturday night post to just keep an eye on Justin Gilbert because of the fact that he was, you know, dealing with that illness. And Mike Tomlin doesn't like them young players missing practice, you know. But even with that said, you would have thought that the numbers may have worked out in Justin Gilbert's favor. But Mike Tomlin don't care. If you miss some practices and you're a young guy, that usually doesn't bode well for you. So we saw Kobe Hamilton, of all people, back there returning kicks with Fitzgerald Toussaint. And boy, you don't even have enough confidence in Jarvis Jones to give you special team snaps, you know, running down there. Now, obviously, it's not something that he was asked to do during the season, because you got guys like L.J. Fort, you got guys like Anthony Ciccolo, you know, guys that spent a lot of time with Danny Smith doing that. But yeah, Jarvis Jones can't be too happy on this Monday morning here. And D'Angelo Williams, they have him listed as one offensive snap being played. Darius Heyward-Bey, I'm with you. I thought being as how you're going to dress him, you see him maybe, you know, maybe play a little bit more than what he did. But keep in mind that didn't he go limited full during the week? So that probably explains him not being part of the game plan. They probably weren't sure whether or not they would have him. So once they did have him, they just, you know, let him play his normal amount of snaps on special teams there. So, yeah, a few surprises on that inactive list, but just goes to show you, man, how you might have five or six of these things nailed just because of injuries or because of obvious situations with some healthy scratches. It just goes to show you that it's not always as cut as dry as what you might think they would be when it comes to the seven guys being down on Sunday.
Yeah, Mike's got some ideas. I mean, obviously – get dressed in the two kickers was a precautionary measure that, you know, we didn't foresee, and a few others. So let's just throw a couple things out here. Is Jarvis Jones done as a Steeler for this season, barring injury?
I think he'll dress again. I think
he'll dress this week.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to dress against the Browns, in the playoffs. You know, I think you need, I don't.
Well, let's take it a week at a time. So, you know, Dave, the question is, the important thing for our listeners as we get into the conversation is to realize this is not week one of the exhibition season or week four of the exhibition season where you've got 90 or 75 guys on the sideline. The Steelers only get to dress 46 guys. And so, you know, when you talk about sitting guys, you can't sit 22 guys. I mean, you know, you can not dress guys and you can not play guys, but you've only got a group of 53 to choose from. So somebody's got to play. So that's the first thing. So if you're going to count 10 guys out all, you know, immediately, that means all the guys who are playing are also playing special teams and doing a lot of things. So historically what we've seen teams, and I think Mike do, is typically you play most of your defensive guys and you play your offensive line and you pick and choose on your skill guys. So that's the general framework about how these things work. What are your thoughts, Dave?
Do you play Roethlisberger at all in Cleveland, even if it's just to hand off?
I think what I do here, as long as I'm not worried about stat sheets, record books, or personal incentives or things that may be contract related, and let's not be naive and suggest that that doesn't matter or it doesn't exist. Okay, so if we just take that out of the conversation, I don't dress Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, James Harrison, and Marquise Pouncey. I probably don't dress those five guys.
The only reason I ask about Roethlisberger is because we're going to talk about it at some point. Is him having a week off, you know, detrimental? You know, in other words, are you worried about him coming back after having a week off?
No, because if they had a bye, we wouldn't really be talking about it. So. You know, he can practice, you know, take a couple snaps this week, you know, take some reps Wednesday and Thursday, full week. So I don't, and I really would not dress those five guys. Then you're not going to use them no matter what. So that's five of your guys, and you get Landry a bunch of snaps, and it's an important game for Landry and his free agency. He gets to put some stuff on tape. I would play D'Angelo Williams. He hasn't played in, you know, 8 weeks or whatever the right number is. If he's healthy, you know, give him 10 carries, and so he gets some work. Give Fitz Toussaint 10 carries, he gets the work. You've got all these other wide receivers figuring out, you know, trying to figure out what they're doing. So that makes sense. And then I'd start B.J. Finney at center. And, you know, I know people are like, well, maybe Marcus Gilbert or whatever. We can debate some of the other guys. But those are the five guys that I would sit that are significant.
Well, I think you, as far as offensive line, just and I tried to throw this around in my head a little bit. I think you can, can't you go Villanueva? We haven't seen a lot of Hubbard at guard. I don't know how much we want to see that, but can you go Villanueva, Hubbard, Finney?
I think if you're going to play Hubbard, I think you'd play him at right tackle, right, and sit Gilbert.
Well, you got Mahalik, right? I mean,
I'm not playing him. Jesus. I mean, well, I'm not starting him.
Would you play Mahalik at right tackle?
Not for the whole game, maybe for the second half.
All right, so if that's the case, then if not both of your guards are going to have to play. So if you let you have to let Villanueva start at left tackle, I think.
I think you let all four of them start. I would just not dress Pouncey. I'd play Finney the first half. I'd play those five guys. That's fine. You're set in that respect. And then if you want to work in, Hubbard and
Mahalik and
they just do it as you see fit. Because you're gonna the defensive linemen you have, they're gonna have to play because Tua's not playing. So everybody else is just going to have to play, and your offensive linemen are going to have to play. Just you don't have enough of them. So
well, there's no right answer here if one of these guys gets injured. I can hear it now. Mike should have. Is there a roster spot that we could play with here that we could promote one of these? Well, really, there is only one of them. Kevon Milton. You got Matt. You know what? You got Matt Filer out there as well too. And didn't you bring him up at one point during the season? Is there a roster spot where we can bring a guy like Matt Filer up?
Only Shabazz is. You're not going to – I don't think you can play with Ayers. You already did Richardson, so it's only Shabazz. And I can't see them – I don't really see them giving snaps to a guy to – I think they're more likely to have guys play than have a guy who hasn't played ever come in and play.
You're probably going to keep – I'm guessing you're probably going to keep
– What do you think of the five that I said not dressing? Do you agree with that or no?
Yeah, I'm not dressing Ben, A, B – any of the killer bees, Pouncey.
And Harrison? Did you sit Harrison?
Yeah, he won't like it, but you sit him.
That's six.
There's no way. Ladarius, there's absolutely.
And that's seven. There's your seven right there. I think that's it. I think that's your list.
And, now obviously you only have seven on that list, but there's other guys that I don't dress.
Don't play that you don't play.
There's a few of them I don't dress because.
I think you'll dress 53 guys or 46 guys. I don't think they'll. Don't think they'll have anybody not dressed.
Yeah, because you'll probably need some, just in case. How much do you? It's going to be interesting to see how. And look, Ben even said after the game, assuming we have number three seed locked up, yada yada. I hope a lot of these guys, injured guys, get some rest. Ramon, who would you rather see time? Ramon Foster or David DeCastro?
I mean, I'm just going to assume those guys are. It'd be really unlucky if they got hurt. Let me ask you this. Do you start Vince Williams and Tyler Matakevich? Or Vince Williams and somebody? I mean, do you play Shazier and Timmons?
I would not play Timmons. I would start Shazier and Vince for a series or two, and then I would get Shazier out of there, I think. Because I think I want to get some snaps with Williams and Shazier on the field just in case.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody's going, hey, do we have consecutive starts that, we need to worry about for any – not for – well, Antonio Brown has one of those streaks gone.
Well, Timmons dang sure does. He has 100 that was his 100th consecutive – well, but look, I mean, it's fun for us to sit here and talk about the streaks. Those streaks mean absolutely nothing.
Right. The only thing that means something is if guys have incentives in their contract, and that's really not something that goes on as much today. So, I'm with you. It's not a big deal.
Timmons has played now in 100 consecutive, or he has started 100 consecutive regular season games, and he has played in 119 consecutive games. William Gay has 159. William Gay leads all cornerbacks in the league with 159 consecutive games played in. How many? Now, obviously, his game started streak now has ended because he has missed some starts, not actual games. But, yeah, it's fun for us to talk about them, but that means absolutely nothing when it comes to health of these players. I still think Timmons gets a couple snaps in this game, and then I think you see Vince Williams, Ryan Shazier, maybe for a series of two, and then you turn it over to the rest of the guys after that.
I think you could see them start the normal defense without James Harrison. So I would agree with that. And, you know, who knows? Maybe they'd even start Harrison. I don't think you typically make the changes on the defensive side of the ball. So we're largely in agreement there. And your secondary is going to be your secondary. That's all going to be the same. You know, maybe Jordan Dangerfield gets some snaps. We didn't hear about any injuries in the game. You know, Ben flexed his knee a couple times. Golden was limping around one time. Ricardo Matthews, he's a guy who, if you could not use him, you'd like not to. But, I mean, how many snaps can you play with Hargrave, McCullers, LT Walton, and Maxey? I mean, so, you know, he's another guy that you might, if that ankle is really bothering him, you really kind of limit the snaps that he gets. You know, a lot of two down lineman fronts. Okay, Dave, I'm trying to think of this.
Mike Mitchell left for a little bit as well, too, didn't he?
I did not see that. He may well have, but I didn't notice it.
Didn't Mike Mitchell leave for a couple snaps early in the game? Earlier in the game, I thought for sure he did. But anyway, let's see what else is there. What else?
So let's talk about playoff scenarios here, since you know now we know the Steelers are locked in at 3. It looks like it'll be Miami, but it's not guaranteed to be Miami.
No, it's going to be Kansas City or Miami.
Right. And so the Kansas City scenario is Miami loses to New England, certainly possible. Kansas City wins. And is Kansas City playing Oakland? I'm trying to remember.
Ask me again.
The scenario where the Steelers play Kansas City. Miami loses. Miami beats New England.
And Kansas City loses to San Diego, right?
Yeah, it has to. In Oakland. Oakland, it doesn't, at that point, it doesn't matter. Or Oakland wins. We're talking about who's the sixth seed. So to be the worst seed, Miami's got to win. To not be the worst seed, Miami's got to win. Kansas City's got to lose.
Yeah.
You with me here?
You broke up a little bit on it there. So I assume you're talking about the final seed there still. I've been worried about the number 3 seed with the Steelers, and that's locked in, and Houston's locked into the number 4. The number 2 seed's, the number 1 seed's still up in the air as well, too. So you have a team like New England that still has something to play for this week, right?
Yep. And if they win, everything's set. You know, the Steelers are set. If Miami loses, they're the 6th seed.
Okay. There you go. Now, which of those two teams would you rather play?
Miami. I mean, Kansas City scares me a little bit, even though the Steelers have done well at home against them. And I would look, the preferred path is as it sits right now. If you're drawing it up, you couldn't draw it up any better. You get Miami at home, and then you go to Oakland without either team having their starting quarterback. Now, I like Matt Moore. I don't think Matt McGloin's useless, but he's not David Carr. And I think the Steelers can win both those games and then potentially be going to Foxborough. And I think the draw for the New England is the team they probably least like to see is Kansas City coming to Foxborough at that point in the schedule before the Steelers can get there. So, you know, the way things are right now is the way I'd like them. Kansas City, they scare me. Justin Houston's good. He's back. People talk about them not having a lot of weapons on offense. Travis Kelce's a beast. He's going to maybe be first-team all-pro tight end. Tyreek Hill's a guy who's become a serious weapon, not just in the return game. They don't turn it over. They can grind it out on the ground. I think Kansas City's I would put them as the third best team in the AFC.
Yeah, they're up there. Look, I mean, Alex Smith, we talked about him before. They play that small ball. They don't turn the football over, and their defense causes havoc. So, and their defense is causing havoc this year for sure with D Ford and Houston and you know, some decent corners on the back end there. But this is a team we saw the Steelers, you know, get on them.
Destroy.
Early, you know, early on in the season as well, too. So I'm with you. I'd rather play Miami first. Then I would like to potentially play Oakland next. And then I like to watch Kansas City and New England try to beat the snot out of each other as well, too. Is the team that the Steelers played Christmas night the best defense they'll face the remainder of this season? Is that the toughest defense they'll play?
I don't, you know, not without Jimmy Smith. I mean, it's a good defense. I don't, you know, the Steelers were able to run the ball on them. You know, they put up 400 and what, you know, they put up 240 yards in the fourth quarter. I don't think so. I don't. You know, they got some pressure, not a ton of pressure. I respect that defense, but I don't think it's. There are not a lot of great. Kansas City, I think, has a better defense. Steelers may not play Kansas City, so maybe that makes that moot. New England, we've seen them a bit up and down. And then in the NFC, you know, there are better defenses for sure in the NFC, starting with Seattle. But, it could be, Dave. It could be just because the next two they see, if it's Miami and Oakland, those are not – Miami's better than Oakland, but Oakland doesn't have a great defense. They have a great player on defense. And Miami's defense has been a little bit up and down.
Yes, I would agree. The path is there. New England, I think, is the obvious team that you point to that could potentially stand in the way. I think Pittsburgh. Do you want to go to Arrowhead? Not necessarily. That's a loud place to have to play, right? So I'd much rather, I think, play Oakland without Carr. Even though they got some decent wide, Oakland's defense just isn't all that great this year as well too. So, do the Steelers beat Cleveland? Not that it matters. I mean, we still got to talk about that game, unfortunately.
I'll be somewhat interested to watch it. Just the same reason we watched the fourth exhibition game, the exhibition season, because I'd like to see some of these other guys play. I mean, Landry Jones got a lot to play for, man. He's a free agent, so. This is a chance for him to do something. Cleveland's got pride to play for, and I know people are talking about, well, if they win and San Francisco loses, it's possible that they don't have the first pick or the second pick. I promise you there's not a guy on the field who gives a damn about whether they're picking first or second. So it's not going to be as if they're not trying. I think it's good. They got the win last week, so that means a lot. So I didn't want the narrative to be the Steelers need to win this game and the Browns are 0-15. So that's off the boards too. So you don't have that. So they may play loose and easy, and maybe they give some other guys an opportunity as well. But I think they'll be out there trying to win.
Because Landry Jones is your backup quarterback right now, and because you have to throw out, you have to live in the now. And make sure that you get him snaps to have him ready. With that said, would you play Zach Mettenberger the entire second half against Cleveland to see what he has, or would you play Landry the whole game?
I play Landry the whole game. I don't think Zach will get a snap.
Okay, fair enough. What about three quarters? Could I twist your arm to pull Landry out after three quarters?
Because if it's a 20-point game one way or the other, I'd consider it. If they get a chance to win the game, I'm not. If the game's in the balance, I'm not changing my quarterback.
Okay, and think about this as well too. At some point during this game against Cleveland, that offensive line that whoever's under center is not going to be behind an offensive line that you would ever start a game with as well too. So is that an incentive maybe to get Landry out, or are you just not going to live in your fears?
Well, I think because the only guys who are going to get time, because I don't even know that Mihaly gets time, because if it's only Finney and Hubbard, I don't worry about it. If, you know, if there's some crazy route happens where, you know, you got guys that, you know, we're trying to figure out what number they are in the playbook, then yes. But I don't foresee that.
Questionable call. What haven't we hit that people are going to get on us for not hitting? The Shazier penalty?
The Antonio Brown no face mask. I mean, the Shazier penalty, I don't even know what to say. Is it helmet to helmet? I guess technically yes. But if a guy's bent at the knees with his head down, where is he supposed to tackle him? I mean, he had his head. It's not – I mean, Shazier dipped his head a little bit. I saw you put a good gif up on it. And so it shows all the contact very clearly. Letter of the law, can you call that? Yes, you can. What's the defender supposed to do? I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't situations there.
What happened with Antonio Brown on the touchdown catch he didn't make, where he kind of didn't make an effort for it? I felt like if he had laid out for it early in the game, he's got a touchdown, and I think he was looking for the pass interference call, and he never even really put his arms out.
Yeah, I remember that one. What did you think about his push off? Good call. What about the Ayers PI? How many times have we seen kind of Sammy Coates? Look, we figured out a way to talk about Sammy Coates.
I thought it was a legitimate call. Had they not called it, we've seen plenty of those not called. Let's put it that way.
And that's what I'm getting at. How many times? A couple times this year, haven't we seen Sammy not get kind of that same call?
Yes.
Maybe it's because
he doesn't. You know, he didn't sell it, didn't fight for it. You know,
maybe
did a good job of going down and reaching out. And
maybe it's because Ayers is vertically challenged in that situation there. David. Had Sammy Coates – I figured out another way to say Sammy Coates' name in this podcast. Had Sammy Coates played in that game yesterday, 10 of the Steelers' last 15 draft picks would have seen action in a very meaningful game late in the season against the Baltimore Ravens. What does that say? How many teams do you think can say that?
You know, different teams, different years, we see that. It certainly has been a productive draft in the sense that the three guys have been great. Your fourth guy's on IR, your fifth guy got picked by another team, and then your sixth guy's been a good special teams contributor, and your last guy just, you know, made his appearance. So it certainly looks like a awfully good 2016 NFL draft for the Steelers.
And look, if you start getting any, even if you get Cinquez Golson just to play gunner on special teams, right? In other words, you got to take your hat off and hand it to Kevin Colbert too, because I would have never imagined that we would talk about all these guys playing what they're playing and playing at the level that they're playing right now. And you know, I think this defense has had some warts throughout the season, obviously, but they're really a different team, a different defense in the second half of this season so far as well, too. So what else? Tony Dungy saying, what do you think about Tony Dungy's comments about that Mike Mitchell hit there in the second half?
I don't hear those in the home game, so...
Yeah, I don't think that should have been a penalty on Mike Mitchell, and obviously it wasn't. I think Tony was off base there. Willie McGinnis during the pregame saying Stephon Tuitt and Cameron Hayward have an opportunity to have a big week.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. Willie McGinnis on NFL Network pregame saying Stephon Tuitt and Cameron Hayward have an opportunity to have a big week.
I would tell Willie McGinnis that we enjoyed having him on the show and look forward to his next career. See how he does.
How does that happen? I just don't understand that. But all right, we're up against it here. Anything else you want to add? Get a shout out to Craig before I wrap us up.
Yep. Yep, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger, which everybody in the country may have today after his Christmas Day fourth quarter. Let Craig Oxand be your guide through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Cleveland. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxand today, 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Steelers are in the playoffs. We got that going. We kind of have a, you know, we won't probably have a Browns beat writer on a Wednesday. We might get Chris Hoke or find something else to do something a little different. Maybe we'll talk about the playoffs. We've spent very little time this year kind of talking about teams around the NFL. So maybe we'll just have some good NFL talk on Wednesday and then get into a preview of the game. And we'll recap the Mike Tomlin presser and all of that as well for Friday.
Yeah, that sounds fine to me. And, folks, appreciate you. I hope everybody had a great Christmas there. We appreciate everybody for listening as well. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and find that donate button upper right portion of the site. Several people have donated over the holiday season here. Thank you. Maybe we'll get to some listener emails as well, too. Fire one off to us for us to talk about Wednesday, because as David said, we're probably not going to have a beat writer on to preview this last game against the Cleveland Browns as well. David, thanks a lot. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday.
Yep, and I hope everybody did have a Merry Christmas as well. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.